Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Thursday, May the 25th, 2023. Good morning, Christopher.
Good morning.
And we have Chris Woodward in studio with me, and joining us in Kansas City is a good friend, Ray Pritchard.
Hey, Tim, how you doing this morning?
Doing well. Weather report for KC is...
Oh, this is biking, golf, weather paradise here in Kansas. We're going up to 76 today, not much humidity, bright sunshine. Good day to be outside.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
I'm liking it.
I got a softball game tonight. My daughter's playing softball.
Play softball, do you, Chris? What league's that?
What my daughter plays.
Oh, your daughter plays. Yeah. I thought you were in the church league.
I'm just in the cheering section.
You ever play church league or...
I played church league basketball when I was in fourth grade, and I never scored a point, but I did have a game-winning assist one time against another. It was an interdenominational match, if you will, between two churches there. And
you never scored a point? Not
I
one?
I never scored a point. No, I was a bench warmer.
You were a bench warmer?
Yes.
In fourth grade church basketball?
I was, yeah. You sat on the bench a lot, and then I realized that I was probably better suited for time in band and other things.
Yeah,
so
Okay. I'm with you.
All right. Well, anyway. Church league.
I'm not bitter or anything.
I've seen a lot of church league competition where people lose their Christianity.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Real fast.
Yeah,
it's one of those. If you could lose your faith, your salvation, you would. Moments.
People throwing elbows under the basket.
That's right.
Huh?
That's right. Knocking you down in Jesus' name.
Yeah. Bless your heart. One of those things.
Oh my goodness! All right, a lot to talk about today. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We got Jenna Ellis coming up at the bottom of the hour. Then we got Dr. Alex McFarland the next hour. Ray, do you want to tease what Alex is going to be talking about with Steve Paisley Jordahl?
Look, this is an amazing discovery. The folks who do the ancient manuscripts have discovered, Tim, a version of the Gospel of Matthew that had been hidden, unrevealed, for 1,800 years. Because it goes way, way, way back. It has to do with manuscripts being... parchment manuscripts being written on, erased or scraped off, and then written over. And it's not until the discovery of ultraviolet examination that this has come to light. So there's been a new version, if you will, of Matthew chapter 12 that's just been discovered. So we're going to talk about it.
All right, looking forward to that conversation. Let's see. The big story, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida yesterday on Twitter, when it finally got to working right, announced he was going to run for president. Of course, no surprise. This was anticipated for a couple of months now. So what happened yesterday afternoon?
Yeah, well, DeSantis news broke yesterday afternoon around 3 o'clock Central that he had filed the paperwork to run for president. And then he had the big announcement.
What does that paperwork look like? Have you looked at it?
You know, it's probably really thick. I'm sure he signed it a lot. Okay. Had some attorneys weigh in on it as well.
Kind of like a car rental?
Yeah. And so he went on Twitter Spaces, which is a thing there on within Twitter. And he
is that
had
a news word,
discussion.
The thing?
It is.
Okay.
He sat down with Elon Musk and some other people for the announcement. He had a Q&A to go over various topics.
I was trying to listen to the thing and it didn't work.
Yes. Well, that was the case for a lot of people, myself included, because you and I were texting. I checked with Jenna Ellis too, like, hey, is this thing working for you? It kept crashing. It crashed at least two or three times. And Elon Musk and others explained that it was due to the vast or large amount of people that were trying to log on to Twitter to listen to the announcement. Various ballpark figures have been thrown around this morning. Fox says a 500,000 people. I've seen anywhere from 600,000 to 800,000 people as well.
Yeah, and I hope Elon Musk or Twitter will clarify that. I mean, I guess it's not really important, except that, you know, I mean, there's a big difference between 500,000 and a million people. I saw somewhere 700 to 800 thousand people. What happened was, and I'm kind of, Ray, I'm kind of surprised because Elon Musk is known for his business skills, and yet the servers there that he was trying to use for Twitter Spaces crashed because too many people were trying to use it at all at one time.
Well, which tells us, among other things, the tremendous interest in Ron DeSantis. He is the most credible opponent to Donald Trump. And I think, guys, this, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's ever been a presidential announcement like this.
No, there hasn't.
Ever on social media. Right. Not like what they did. I mean, this was I thought it was a very clever move by the DeSantis campaign. Rather than having some rally in a stadium like everybody else does, he goes on social media. And yeah, there were some glitches there the first few minutes. The system overloaded. But I thought once it got rolling, he did just fine.
Yeah. I think two people that, if it's true that it was because a ton of people were trying to log on to something that's not built for something like this, I think it's, in a roundabout way, a win for Elon Musk and Twitter because it brings attention to their product. Certainly, they'll get this figured out. They'll get some
extra
servers.
It's a work in progress.
It is.
But, of course, they probably had never had that much traffic at that one time. The other thing is that Governor DeSantis immediately after that went on Fox News with Trey Gowdy. I didn't see the interview, but that's a more traditional forum, that is cable news television, to talk about, you know, his announcement and so forth. So, created, you know, quite a buzz. The thing of it was, of course, a lot of folks made fun of, you know, the fact that the Twitter service wasn't working right.
Sure.
And that's politics, right? Mm-hmm. However, it wasn't Ron DeSantis' fault that Twitter wasn't working.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It was just an unfortunate situation. But as you say, Ray, once he was able to get on there and start talking, he Governor DeSantis, did discuss a lot of issues in depth. Now, the questioners were friendly to him, no question about it, or they weren't adversarial.
No.
To him, but at the same time, I don't think they were looking for that kind of environment for this announcement. You know, Tim Scott, when he announced, you know, he didn't take adversarial questions. He just made an announcement in his hometown.
Right.
That's traditionally the way people do it. So it was an unusual, as you say, Ray, and way to formally announce your presidency. Mm-hmm. Your campaign for presidency, I should say. But it's also unusual in the fact that he did do how long was the interview that he took questions?
I had at least an hour's worth of audio when I left here last night.
Okay, so he's taking questions, Q&A, from people on various and sundry issues, and then he did that with Trey Gowdy for a few minutes, I guess, on Fox News, and he was also along with Mark Levin on his radio program. What I'm saying is unusual that you would get into a lot of policy discussion when you're just announcing that you're going to run for president on the Republican ticket.
Right.
So, now there were so many things that the governor had to say.
Oh,
we had to pick and choose. We picked out three clips. Is that what we did here?
Yeah, I picked out, I actually brought in, as many as six, just in case, we got into some stuff and wondered if we had this, clip. You know, I think this was to be expected. Elon Musk and others did ask him about the situation with Disney there. Obviously, you know, Disney, everybody knows the story. They were very outspoken about DeSantis supporting the parental rights and education law, which bars educational materials about sexual orientation and gender identity for children.
It's
now
Florida.
Been expanded. Yeah. And so DeSantis was asked about that. Disney is now suing DeSantis in the state of Florida. And Ron DeSantis told Elon Musk and others that, look, Disney, in a roundabout way, should be thanking me because I probably made Disney more money in the last couple of years than some other governors out there. Clip two.
Nobody probably has made Disney more money than me because they were open during COVID and they were closed in California. And that went on for many, many months, where literally I had all the theme parks in Florida opened in 2020 People are going. It's safe. They're having fun. And the California parks were closed. I think they were closed for over a year out in California. So we were, I think, a much better place to be doing business, certainly since I've been governor.
I didn't ever think about that. Mm-hmm. That's a very good point he made there. You know, he kept he got the Florida theme parks up and going mm-hmm. quicker than they did in California. And so he's saying Disney should thank me because they got all the customers that they wouldn't have otherwise got had mm-hmm. the governor kept Disney closed down.
Yeah, and Disney still makes a lot of money on amusement park profits, you know, from the people going to the amusement parks. Yes, they do have Disney Plus, which does well for them, and they have a lot of licensing deals with all kinds of materials and toys and stuff like
all right,
that.
Clip, they give still me the next clip. What you got?
All right. Well, as we have discussed on this program, you have the NAACP that has issued a travel advisory against Florida in recent days, claiming that it's not safe for black people anymore.
Have we checked on Abe?
Have we had
Abraham Hamilton III?
Have we had him on to talk about this?
We checked on him.
Oh, no.
He's a black a Christian American.
I see what you did there.
And you see what I'm doing there? Mm-hmm. And he's in Orlando.
Yes.
At the National Religious Broadcasters Convention.
Do we need to send help to get?
That's what I'm asking. Yeah. We do need to check.
Can we have JJ fly right. over there and get him out?
See if Abe's okay, because NAACP says it's
that's right. They're
a dangerous place for black folks in Florida. So
DeSantis was asked
maybe
about
get home.
That.
We'll see.
The travel advisory last night as well. Here's what he had to say. Clip four.
Claiming that Florida is unsafe is a total farce. I mean, are you kidding me? You look at cities around this country; they are awash in crime. In Florida, our crime rate is at a 50-year low. We rank number 3 in fourth grade reading and number 2 in fourth grade math amongst our black student population. And oh, by the way, the head of the NAACP lives in Florida, and a lot of their board members have put out on social media during my governorship Florida vacations where they seem to be having an awful good time.
He dunked on them mm-hmm. right there.
Yeah, he did.
Didn't he, Ray?
Yeah. Look, the NAACP just playing politics here,
yeah,
right?
That's what he's pointing that out. They didn't ever – I haven't seen any travel
advisory. The president lives in Florida.
I know, and I haven't seen any travel advisories for Chicago.
Right.
Huh?
No.
Where
no.
It's very dangerous.
Or New York.
It is.
Right.
You can't even go to Navy Pier.
Yeah, this NAACP and then the LGBT group, but was a human rights campaign. Mm-hmm. They're playing politics with this, you know, with these travel advisories. All right, go ahead.
I do have one more, and I'll play this, and then I'll run something past you guys. On the issue of the border, DeSantis said, amongst other things, that he will secure the border and build a wall. Clip 3.
Biden's opened the southern border and allowed massive amounts of drugs to pour into the country. We'll shut down the border, construct a border wall, and hold the drug cartels accountable.
So here's what I thought immediately after he said this last night. Assuming Donald Trump does agree to debates, Republican debates, with people like Ron DeSantis, Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, and stuff like that, I would imagine they're probably all going to make similar comments to what we just heard from Governor DeSantis there. To which Trump, I think, could very well just lean over the podium and go, I did that.
Well, except he didn't. Let me just say this about mm-hmm. the border wall. That's border plate Republican response for anybody running for president. President Trump's campaign in 2016, where he separated himself from the other Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and the others in the Republican primary, is when he said, I'm going to build a wall and Mexico will pay for it. That's really what, if you want to know the theme that really separated him, and mm-hmm. that's when he took off. He took off like a rocket ship or a rocket man, to borrow from Trump.
Right, yeah.
to borrow from Elton John. President Trump did try, and he did build some mm-hmm. Of the wall down there. But the Congress wouldn't allocate any money for him to do that. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So that got to he tried to do as much as he could with the resources that he had, but the Congress, especially the Democrats, thwarted him on that. So it's does that make sense, Ray? You know what I'm talking about?
Well, sure. And Mr. Trump did as much as he could do.
Yes.
But Ron DeSantis is right. And maybe this is the
He's right about what?
That the wall needs to be built. It needs to be finished. It needs to be done. And I think one thing that Ron DeSantis is going to do, he's going to say, look at what we've done in Florida.
Right.
You elect me, we're going to get that wall built. We're going to get this stuff done.
Yeah. I very much like Governor DeSantis. I heard him speak in person in was February, I guess, when I was in South Florida. He came and addressed a conference that I was that I was attending there, and I was very impressed. He is a solid conservative governor, but I will say this: it's often easier to say I'm going to do something when you're campaigning, and when you get into office, as Mr. Trump found out, it's not so easy. Especially, what I'm referring to, ladies and gentlemen, is building a wall, physical wall. What I'm saying is, the governor had a great advantage in Florida in that he had a supermajority legislature. Okay, Republicans control the House and the Senate. So they were able to get everything done that they wanted to do.
Right.
I'm not in any way taken away from Governor DeSantis, because guess who helped build that majority?
Right.
That supermajority.
Sure.
And after he was elected governor the first time, it was him, Governor DeSantis. I'm just saying, we're spending a lot of time on this. When you say I'm going to build a wall, okay, that's a good idea, and I agree with it, and I think it would be very helpful in stopping the massive illegal immigration into the country. I'm just saying that it's easier said than done. All right, next clip.
One final thing here. A lot of people that prefer Donald Trump or one of the other candidates were really vocal on social media, as was a lot of people. And it's certainly their right to be vocal and use their First Amendment freedoms to share their two cents about things. But a lot of people were calling him Rob, President Trump included, Rob.
What is that about?
I don't know. He has called him more than once Rob. Instead of Ron, he's also called him DeSanctimonious. I saw one tweet from a guy. I'm not making this up. This guy is a libertarian, which, again, is his right. And he said that he predicted that Ron DeSantis will be the Kamala of 2024 in terms of presidential candidates. And so a lot of people were saying things about Ron DeSantis, to which he did say to Trey Gowdy last night, I don't have an issue with the name calling. It's going to come with the territory. And he went on to share a few more thoughts. Clip. Six.
I don't mind being called different things. I've been called everything but a child of God as it is. So that doesn't faze me. And you can call me whatever you want. Just make sure you call me a winner, because that's what we've done in the state of Florida. And that's exactly what we would do nationally, not only in the election, but actually bringing all these great policies to bear. There'll be slings and arrows, but I'm a big boy. I can take it. You know, there's a lot of people that have given a lot more than that. So that this country can be free. You can see their tombstones in places like Arlington National Cemetery. So if the sacrifice I have to make is people are going to call me names, that pales into comparison with so many people have done for me throughout history so that I could live in a free country.
What he's talking about, that was a question about the name calling that President Trump has been doing for several months now against Governor DeSantis. Trump calls DeSantis sanctimonious. Does sanctimonious. That's how he's often referred to him. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but he calls him that often. And then now he's gone to, I'm talking about Trump, gone to calling Governor DeSantis Rob.
Right, which he did last night.
Right, instead of his name Ron. I read where that's a reference, Ray. I did read where that's a reference to a Daily Mail, which is a large news site, British news site. Daily Mail put a headline up about Governor DeSantis, and they called him Rob instead of calling him Ron, and Trump is playing off that now. So this Trump is
that's a little obscure, isn't it?
I know. Nobody understands it, because I had several people last night text me and say, why is Trump calling Ron DeSantis Rob? I just think it's Trump's way of digging at Governor DeSantis with all this name calling. Now, President Trump did issue a statement on Truth Social last night after the DeSantis announcement.
The technical difficulties.
Yes. So what did the former president say about the situation?
Yes, I'll share the link here in a sec so people can see this for themselves. But here is what Trump posted.
Are you about to quote him?
I am. I'm not going to do it in a Trump voice.
Okay.
But he said, quote, "Rob, my red button is bigger, better, stronger, and is working. Parentheses, truth. Yours does not. Per my conversation with Kim Jong-un of North Korea, soon to become my friend. Exclamation point.
What could that possibly mean? That doesn't even make sense, guys. Why would you throw in Kim Jong-un in your... What? Somebody explain what's going on there.
Well, number one, Trump does this all himself. Okay? That's... He has... This is his social media platform, mm-hmm. Truth Social, which he started when Twitter kicked him off. So he rants. He rants daily and often. Most Americans don't see that because that is a small platform when compared to Twitter.
Right.
So what he's saying right there, I don't. Maybe he can. Let me see that again.
New York Post referred to it as bizarre.
Why would you bring in Kim Jong Un? What could that possibly mean?
Trump says, per my conversation with Kim Jong Un of North Korea, soon to become my friend. I don't know. Mr. Trump or his campaign will have to tell you what he's talking about there. I don't know. Somebody said to me last night, is he seeking the endorsement of the North Korean dictator?
Foreign policy people are not supposed to be involved in our elections.
All right, listen, foreigners. We're going to have to go through this for, I guess, I don't know when it's going to stop. Mr. Trump he hates Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. I mean, I think, I'm not talking about on a human level, but I'm talking about politically. He can't stand the guy because he's challenging him. And Trump feels like he doesn't need to be challenged. He in essence, feels like I'm the incumbent, mm-hmm. and everybody needs to get behind me. And of course, he has a history, Mr. Trump does, of personalizing criticism of his challengers. Remember when he posted the picture of Melania and Ted Cruz's wife on social media? In other words, he was saying, my wife's prettier than yours. That's when Ted Cruz said Donald Trump is a pathological liar. Remember that? Mm-hmm. So this is how Trump operates. Those people have that baked in. I think most Americans are pretty good natured and know that there's elbows thrown in politics and some things are, you need a little humor back and forth between the candidates. It's just sometimes Mr. Trump, he just gets downright ugly with his jabs and criticisms. When you put a picture of another man's wife up and you say, my wife's prettier than yours, that's ugly. And that's rude, and it shouldn't be a part of the political discourse. A lot of what Trump does is funny. He's an entertainer. He was the number one TV show in America for 10 years, I think, with The Apprentice. At least it was a top-rated show. Mm-hmm. So the guy knows how to, how to entertain, I would say. But some of the stuff he does, like with this Kim Jong-un thing, you just scratch your head and go, what in the world is he doing here? All right, we'll be back momentarily.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on Today's Issues. If you want to check us out on Facebook, just type in Facebook Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We post the stories that we talk about there, and we live video stream the show there. We also have our live video streaming service of our own, streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. Very simple to go on there, streaming.afa.net, and we got a lot of other good, we stream a lot of our shows there. So check that out. Dr. Ray Pritchard's in Kansas City, and Chris and Tim, we're in talking third person now.
We're in the micropolitan of Tupelo.
We're in Tupelo, and we thank you for listening wherever you may be and hope you're enjoying nice weather. Springtime / summertime is here, and good riddance to cold weather.
Yes, sir.
Bring it.
Huh? I know some people like cold weather, but I'm not one of them.
It hung around too long this year.
I'm glad
it's gone.
Yeah, I was, you know, March, I'm ready for global warming by March.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
March,
sir.
April. All right. We were talking about Governor Ron DeSantis announcing he's running for president. Mm-hmm. No surprise there. So now let's count the formally announced candidates, Chris.
Okay.
Will you name them? And I got five fingers here, and I can move to 10 if I need to.
Gotcha.
I'm going to count while you list them by memory.
Okay.
Go,
all
Chris.
Right. Former President Donald Trump.
Yes.
Former Governor Nikki Haley.
Yes.
Senator Tim Scott.
Yes.
Governor Ron DeSantis.
Yes.
Larry Elder.
Yes.
That business guy that we mentioned yesterday.
Yes.
And Vivek Ramaswamy.
Okay, so seven have formally announced.
Yes. My apologies to that business
Asa
guy
Hutchinson.
Whose name I forgot. Is he confirmed?
Yes.
I tried to find that yesterday.
Isn't that right, Ray? Yeah, Governor,
I think he's in, right? Okay.
Former governor of Arkansas?
Yeah.
He's eight. He's number eight.
Well, who's the business guy?
I'll look him up. We mentioned it yesterday.
Perry Johnson, I believe, is his name.
Who?
He's a billionaire.
I've never heard that name in my life.
I think he's just running for fun.
Best of luck, Perry. Best of luck.
Who gets involved in this circus for fun?
Well, yeah. He's a billionaire, man.
He is.
He's a billionaire.
He's in it for the tax write-off.
What's his name again?
Perry Johnson.
Perry Johnson. Yeah, read up on him.
Go ahead, Brent. Perry Johnson?
Okay. I'll read down on him.
I shared a link about him yesterday for those that want more information on him and where he might stand on the issues.
Yeah. So, okay, what's your next story?
Well, let's mention this real quick because Fox just did a big segment on it, and I know Newsmax has done stuff on this as well. That being the whistleblowers against the Biden family's influence peddling scheme. That's how Congressman James Comer and other Republicans continue to refer to this, that being the scheme that they say the Biden family had to make millions of dollars from people in places like Romania and China over the years, going back to Biden's time as vice president. I have some audio here of Congressman James Comer of Kentucky. He's the chairman of the House Oversight Committee that has been waiting on this FBI to overturn documents relating to all this, and they are still waiting on the FBI to turn over the documents they have subpoenaed. Clip 8.
Nothing's going to change with respect to holding him in contempt of Congress if he doesn't turn over the document. Not only do I expect the document, Sean, I expect to know exactly what the FBI did to investigate the validity of the claim. It all stemmed over the course of 2015 and 2016 during the end of the Obama administration when Joe Biden was vice president and he took it upon himself to travel all over the world to some of our adversaries around the world and talk about foreign policy and foreign aid.
Now, that again was Congressman James Comer talking last night on the Sean Hannity program.
What do you think about that? Ray, you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay. I don't even understand exactly what this controversy is all about. So, Chris, go back and explain what's the issue here.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go back a couple of weeks. The House Oversight Committee had a press conference to which James Comer, Jim Jordan, many other people laid out what they called evidence that Biden himself was what they called a walking billboard for the family during his travels abroad to make money not only for himself, but Hunter and other members of the Biden family.
That's an extremely serious accusation.
It is. And the concern is that because Biden oversees the Department of Justice, it falls under the executive branch, The concern is that the people who would be in charge of investigating and enforcing our laws are doing what the president wants them to do by staying
silent. Well, sure they are. Look
this.
At the FBI saying they're not going to comply with a subpoena by the Congress.
Supposedly, they've got a document that more or less proves this.
Yes.
Supposedly. They've got it. I mean,
well, you also got the IRS whistleblowers who are saying that their investigation was squelched of Hunter Biden.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, these are very extreme. These are extremely serious accusations against Joe Biden and his family. Influence peddling, making money while you're VP off, you know, while you shouldn't be, your family shouldn't be. So,
just go ahead. Let me ask a clarifying question here. So, what we've got cases where Representative Comer's committee, this is their area.
Yep.
They say the FBI's got this document. They subpoena it. The FBI doesn't deny they've got the document. They're basically saying, we're not going to give it to you, right?
Yes. Yeah.
How is
so
that
they
possible?
Still haven't given well, I know. Well, Kevin McCarthy, I think, said that they're looking at holding Christopher Wray, their FBI director, in contempt of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I've said this before, and I would say this, quite frankly, if the parties were switched. Because we have law and order, we have a constitutional process in this country, and if the FBI gets to decide what subpoenas they're going to comply with respect to Congress, who has constitutional oversight,
right?
then they've gone rogue. Now, some people listening going, Tim, the FBI going rogue? Wake up! It's
right.
been going on that way for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm talking about this. This is a People say, well, the federal government, the Department of Justice, has been weaponized to favor one political party.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is a clear example of that. When FBI says, thumbs its nose at the United States Congress and says, we're not going to give you the document.
Well, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because they could come up with all sorts of reasons, Chris. They could say, we've lost it. We've misplaced it. We can't find it. But they're not saying that, as I understand it. They're actually saying, you want this document. We've got it.
Yes.
We're not going to give it to you.
Yeah, and it's very concerning because, again, these are supposed to be the people that we trust to enforce our laws in a government of the people, for the people, by the people, and they're picking and choosing which people they're going to protect.
You know what, Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House, he doesn't need to warn him anymore. He needs to do that today. I'm talking about. I don't know how that process works, but he needs to say, Director Wray, you are in contempt of Congress because this was supposed to be given over to the Congress in May 10th, I think, and that's when the last day is when the FBI gave him sent over a 6-page letter.
Mm-hmm.
To the to Chairman Comer and said, we're not giving it to you.
Right. And there is a precedent for holding high-ranking officials in contempt. For example, let's go back to 2012, I believe it was, when the House voted to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt of Congress over his failure to turn over documents related to that Fast and Furious scandal. So it wouldn't be the first time this kind of stuff has happened.
Well, hey, Jenna is with us now, so we can ask her about this. Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio, heard from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time. She is a constitutional attorney. And Jenna, good morning.
Good morning. Great to join you guys.
Okay. I know you hadn't been talking about this topic this morning. You've been talking about DeSantis and his announcement down at National Religious Broadcasters and things related to it. However, what about this, the FBI telling the House of Representatives we're not complying with the subpoena?
Well, you know, I think that they're going to have some litigation over that. And, you know, there is a historic precedent that would suggest that there are limitations in terms of what Congress can request from a separate and co-equal branch. But the standard is that if it is used for a legislative purpose, then generally speaking, of course, Congress can hail in via subpoena members of the executive branch. And we've seen this with testimony prolifically, but we've also seen objections to that. So I think there's going to be some litigation around this. But really the question would be, why wouldn't the FBI want to comply with these subpoenas in terms of a good faith showing of what's actually going on in their, I believe, abuse of oversight and the law and what has actually come out in some of these hearings about how they have targeted specifically parents and conservatives. And I had Jim Jordan on my program just yesterday morning talking about all of this stuff that's coming out. So I do think that eventually, you know, the court will allow them to be healed in.
Well, what could the FBI say, listen, there are names that need to be redacted here or sensitive information that we don't want exposed to the public, and then say, but we're going to give you a private viewing of these documents?
Sure. Yeah. And that happens in negotiations all the time with turning over evidence to say, well, if this is a national security risk, for example, then either we have to make it redacted if it's disseminated to the public or spoken about in open hearing, or they could have a secure hearing that's basically a hearing room similar to a SCIF and say, we're going to view this only in a forum that is protected.
But you know what?
There's a lot of ways to work.
Yeah, you know what? Do you know what the appearance is? Yes, you know what the appearance is, Jenna. The appearance is, I'm going to let you answer that. What is the appearance, Jenna?
I'm not sure I understand the question. The appearance of what?
What does this look like? You don't understand that?
Well, no. I mean, what it looks like to me, you know, of course, is that the FBI is, you know, I mean, I wish I could say that they are trying to, in good faith, make sure that they don't compromise national security, stuff like this. But, of course, to the general public, it looks like they're hiding, right?
That's what I mean by appearance. It looks like the FBI is hiding information to protect the Bidens from scandal. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether that's true or not, we don't know exactly because the Congress can't see the information. But I would say this, Jenna. Maybe I'm too black and white on this, but it just seems to me if the United States House of Representatives has the constitutional authority to subpoena documents from the FBI, then the FBI needs to say, here are the documents you wanted. And whether there's fallout from that that isn't good, that's on the House of Representatives. Because somebody has to, if the FBI can just, you know, make up reasons why they don't want to, be in compliance with a subpoena by the Congress, mm-hmm. then they can make up a thousand different reasons why on anything, seems to me.
Well, and this is where, you know, there are laws, of course, that govern all of this. But at the end of the day, Congress are the representatives of the people.
Right.
On the federal level, and we the people should have access through our representatives to information from our executive branch of our government. I mean, we're not talking about the Fourth Amendment here, right, that protects individuals from unreasonable search and seizure and our private information that could be subpoenaed or, you know, some of those types of legal contexts. We're talking about the government showing we the people who actually hire them and who are in control of our government, what exactly is going on. So just from fundamental fairness and a constitutional perspective, of course we should see it.
You know what? We could say, I've talked to Ed about this. I think I've got a great idea here.
Okay.
May not be. But by the way, Jenna Ellis joining us. Are you still in Orlando at the NRB?
I am indeed. It's been a great time here.
And Chris Woodward in studio. Chris is our newsman. Mm-hmm. Ray Pritchard's in Kansas City. And we're talking to Jenna. I think a lot of rancor, arguments, shouting could be stopped on the part of Republicans v. Democrats in this country if Speaker McCarthy, for example, would ask publicly of his opponent in the House, what's the fellow's name?
Hakeem Jeffries.
Yeah, Democrat minority leader.
Right.
Just say this. Listen. If Joe Biden, while vice president and his family were making millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars off influence peddling. And we would that matter?
Yeah.
And that way, Jeffries could say on the behalf of the Democrats, even if you could prove that, it doesn't matter. Then we know where everybody stands.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to shout about it. You just know that, well, they're not going to be, they're not going to care. That is the Democrats. You can flip that on Republicans too sometimes and say, listen, so I know that's not going to happen. And I guess if that kind of thing happened, you wouldn't have news cable channels at all because there'd be nothing to discuss. I'm just saying, I don't think with Democrats on the issue of Biden, whether he made millions of dollars while he was vice president with China or his son did, I don't think they care. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I wish they would just come out and say, we don't care about
I just
this.
Wonder if he paid his fair share in taxes.
Well, that's years. Being investigated too. All right, Jenna, what was your favorite part of attending the National Religious Broadcasters Convention?
You know, it was seeing all of the great friends, you know, old and new, that are really concerned about promoting truth in society and not just broadcasting political opinion, but really concerned about Christian content. And so it's just always encouraging to be around a really solid group of amazing Christians.
Amen. Well, thank you, Jenna. We appreciate it very much. And
thank you.
Take care. Safe travel.
We're here, but we'll see
you soon.
Thanks.
I know. All right. Thank you. Smart lady right there, Ray.
Oh, she is amazing. Every time we talk to her, I come away and say, she knows so much. And, you know, Tim, she's well-spoken. Well-spoken. You can tell she's moved at the very highest levels of our society. Mm-hmm. She
worked as President Trump's attorney, or one of his attorneys.
Right. She's been there right on the front lines.
Yeah, and she's a constitutional lawyer. She's written books on it, on the Constitution and America. And the other thing is, you know, last November, was it November or October? No, I think it was October. You know, Sandy Rios was in town for our Share-a-thon. Sandy was a very popular morning show host for us here for 10 years. And I could tell you that story, but Sandy's mentioned it before. But basically, the Lord put us together, Sandy and American Family Radio, and it was a God thing. You've heard that expression before?
Yeah.
So Sandy served us well and our listeners well, and she was very popular for 10 years. And then last October, she was in Tupelo, Ray, for the Share-a-thon, and she says, "Can I talk to you?" You know, sometimes that's good, but most of the time when people say, I want to talk to you, it's not good. And so she says, Tim, I hate to tell you this, but I'm wanting to be off the air and move to a podcast. And I said, what? I said, no, I'm vetoing that. And, of course, I was kidding. I mean, Sandy's, you know, she got tired of getting up at 4 a.m. to host a show every day. And anyway, she said, I want to move to a podcast. So then we began to panic a little bit because what are we going to do with Sandy's hour? Because she's awesome.
Super popular.
Yeah.
How do you fill that hour?
I know. So that's when Walker Wildman, my son and I, he's also, you know, in leadership here. So we formed a search committee of two.
Mm-hmm. Church committee?
A search committee, not a church committee. No church committee ever has two.
No, they have 25.
And a lot of coffee.
It was a search committee.
And a lot of coffee.
Yeah, a search committee of two. It was Walker and me. And Walker came. We did about a week or so, and Walker said, hey, what about Jenna Ellis?
Yeah.
And we didn't know Jenna personally. So he calls her up. They talk on the phone. Again, another God thing. He put us together. Jenna says, yes, I'm very interested in that. We didn't know whether Jenna would be because she's like in her, Jenna's probably in her mid-30s or late 30s or somewhere like that. So asking her to come to radio, you know, when she's already doing a podcast, you know, and doing social media, for some people that age, radio seems like an antique. You know what I'm saying? But But anyway, all that to say that the Lord brought Jenna to us, and now she has attracted a huge listening audience.
Yes.
And is well-respected among our listeners, much like Sandy was. Now, they're different in their approaches and their styles. You would expect that to be too. But Jenna and Sandy, both, as you say, Ray, very knowledgeable, very articulate, and very thoughtful. And plus, and they promote a biblical
carry Sandy's podcast.
Oh yeah, so, you can you can hear Sandy three times a week. You just got to go to our AFR podcast.
Yep. I have shared the link on our Facebook.
How do you do that? Oh, you shared the link, so just click on that if you're on our Today's Issues Facebook.
If you are watching the show and sharing your thoughts about various issues, look through the comments for my picture. As Ed referred to me, I am the eye candy.
that was me.
Oh, okay.
I gave you that title.
Okay, don't form a search committee and replace me, please. I have three people depending on me to eat. So, but yeah, look through the comments and you can find our links. It is huge. Podcasts are great. If you've never done it, I suggest you check it out. It's kind of on-demand programming. You can listen to it when you want to.
So if you want to listen to Sandy, like she was on with us in the morning, but you can listen to her anytime, just go to the podcast. Just go to AFR.net, click on podcast, and there you'll find Sandy's. It's called Sandy Rios 24/7. Mm-hmm. All right, next story, Chris.
Well, I do want to mention this because it's going to continue playing out in various parts of Chicago, but other places as well. And I say that because big cities that have been sent all of these migrants or illegals or undocumented people are now starting to discuss putting these kids in schools, even though they've not been screened for, you know, health situations. They've not been tested to see whether what grade they might be in and stuff like that.
Most of them don't speak English either.
That's another big issue. And some Chicagoans are not pleased with this approach. I've got a little bit of a montage. This aired on Fox during kind of a news segment coming out of a commercial break. So there's a bit of music underneath it. But you're going to hear some angry parents here about this idea of Chicago allowing migrant children in schools. Clip 7.
We're inviting in like a magnet. Everybody come here, collect all your freebies. We're going to give it to you. Every sucker in here is going to pay for it.
We have to provide residency, citizenship, health records, vaccination records on an almost annual basis. I actually have a child right now where I must have 5 emails in my inbox stating that my child cannot return to school next year without a specific vaccine. So it's certainly inconsistent with what they're allowing for the migrant children coming into the Chicago public schools. While I'm certainly compassionate, overly compassionate for the migrant children, nobody's saying immigrants can't come here, but where is the law?
Well, listen, I agree that these poor people now, these children that, you know, they got brought here with adults or parents or sometimes without parents. And so you're going to have – I don't know. It's a bad situation, but I would just say this. If you're a Democrat, you voted for this.
Right.
You voted for this chaos and this mass illegal immigration problem. And now you're having to feel the impact of it. But if you're voting for Biden, this is what he said he was going to do. So he's following through with his campaign promise to bring millions and millions and millions of people here and pay for everything. So, yeah. I mean, that's what you see what I'm saying, Ray? It's hard to have sympathy for the people of Chicago who voted for the Democrats because now they're having to live with the consequences of their actions.
Well, that's 100% right about these kids. These kids coming in, we've nothing but compassion for them. They are victims of a terrible situation. But this is what the Biden administration wanted. They wanted open borders. They got it, and now you see the chaos on the border. But it's spreading to the big cities, places like Chicago. Yeah, it's hard to feel much sympathy for them because look, Chicago has gotten a mayor who is an even further left mayor than Lori Lightfoot, mm-hmm. which I would have thought was impossible.
Right.
So this you are getting America in the White House and in Chicago. You're getting what you voted for.
And also that new mayor in Chicago you mentioned, he's the left of Lori Lightfoot, which is
yes, he is.
I didn't know that was possible, but you're going to see crime continue to go up in or at least not go down in Chicago. It's because he doesn't believe in really punishing criminals.
Yeah, and I think that is going, you know, Chicago's problems are going to cause problems for the neighboring cities. Ray, you used to live up there.
Right.
A lot of people from like Northwest Indiana, they come to Chicago. They do it for tourist purposes, or maybe they live so close they drive. Right. And, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of economic things that happen as a result of Chicago being what it is. And now that it's got problems, less and less people are going to go, or there's, you know, it's going to cause problems for all the little suburbs.
Well, we see the out-migration from cities like Chicago, first to the suburbs, and in many cases, Chris, people moving out of the suburbs to places like Indiana, places like Wisconsin, in some cases, places like Florida, because they want to get away from the madness altogether. As long as the Democrats are in control and they have a super liberal mayor, this trend is only going to increase.
All right, we'll be back in 5 minutes with more. Chris, thanks for your contributions this hour. Steve Paisley Jordahl will join us in 5 minutes, and Dr. Alex McFarland will be on with us as well. So we'll see you back here in a few minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.